I think that most people don't practice enough. It's that practicing and feedback loop that many people take for granted. If you think about it, the top athletes in the world practice more than anybody else. The top musicians practice more than anybody else. People in sales and marketing are like, no, I'm so good, I don't need to. And it's an amazing coincidence that the people who practice the most have the greatest success.
Welcome to Centricity, the go-to podcast for B2B executives designed to equip you with deep insights into your buyer's needs so you can consistently deliver exceptional value and generate transformational results with greater efficiency. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Ian Altman to discuss the three most damaging sales tactics. If this is your first time listening, we're so glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the episode. If you're a regular listener, back for more valuable insights, we encourage you to leave us a rating and review. Now, let's dive in.
Hello, welcome to Centricity. Our guest today, Ian Altman, a return visitor. So that's another way of saying he must be a sucker because he's come back. Is an author of Same Side Selling, one of my favorite books. And it's all marked up, if you can see the video. And I use this all the time. I use his worksheets. I've been to his conference. I'm a member of his academy. He's done it. He's started, sold, grew companies, took value to zero to billion, exited those businesses. He travels the world. He may be the world's most interesting guy. Welcome, Ian Altman.
Listen, I rarely do podcasts, but when I do, it's Centricity.
Perfect. Ian, I was listening to your podcast the other day, and you said something that just got me so excited. And you said, I'm going to teach you the three worst and most common things taught to salespeople and how we can turn those faux pas into positives. And that is why I sent you a note and said, you've got to come back, got to come back. So are you game to go through these three?
I am game to go through these three, whatever three they might happen to be.
All right. I'll read some to you. Worst thing taught to sellers, number one, sellers always focus on the features and benefits of your offerings.
Yeah. So keep in mind that most of the mistakes that people make are things that people have been taught by somebody else. So somebody said, here's what you're supposed to do. And then it's like playing telephone. Well, we know when you play the telephone game, not only does the message get distorted along the way, but it usually gets progressively worse. And that's what's happened with most things that sellers have been taught to do. One of them is, well, you have to lead with your features and benefits and make sure people understand all the different features that you have and the benefits of those. And the reality is that in the research I've done with over 10,000 executives around the world on how people make and approve decisions, what we find is that buyers, especially executives, when they're making or approving decisions, ask three fundamental questions. They ask, what problem does this solve? Why do we need it? Namely, what happens if we don't solve it? And what's the likely result or outcome if we actually invest in this? So if you lead with your features and benefits, it'd be like a doctor telling you about the benefits of a surgery or a drug, but you don't think you have the condition that that's intended to treat. So instead, what we need to do is lead with, as if we were a doctor, seeking symptoms that our customers might be facing that could be an indication of a condition that we're good at treating. So it's less about, like, for example, in your business at Centricity, it would be less about telling a B2B company, oh, here are the services that we offer, but instead it might be, so do you have a brand, but nobody knows who you are? Do you have trouble capturing the attention of your ideal clients? Because when you reach out to them, even if you mention your company name, people say, who? Like, those are the types of problems that you solve, and people are experiencing that, then might be interested in what you've got.
How does that change, or does that rule change based on the buyer's journey? In other words, making that introduction, you just gave a reference story to that. What if I'm at the closing table? Is it okay to talk features and benefits then?
You can talk features and benefits only as it applies to what it is that the client is trying to solve. See, in the world of sales, you can either show up as someone who is there to sell something or someone who is there to solve something. So if you said to your client, well, and you said this was important for you, that you needed to solve this issue, and the way we were going to measure success was based on these metrics. Here are the things that we do to ensure those outcomes. Well, now you're talking about the features and benefits as it pertains to delivering the outcome for them. If you just say, oh, and we also offer this feature and this feature and this feature and that feature, but you don't tie it back to what it is they're trying to solve, then you just sound like an infomercial.
So I was looking in my cheat sheet, my workbook, and what you reminded me of is something that you taught and teach about at that closing table, instead of that features and benefits, keeping that focus on results and setting up something you call a results meeting. Share a little bit about that. I think it's brilliant. We build results meetings into workflows when we work with our clients. So a deal's closed, that automatically sets up a trigger for the salesperson to set up a results meeting at a certain number of days. And it's brilliant methodology. I'm stealing it. I'm telling them it's mine. I'm not ever sharing that I learned it from you, Ian. Never.
Fair enough. Story of my life. So Sean, the idea is this, is that if the way our clients make decisions is they ask the questions, what problems does this solve? Why do we need it? And what's the likely outcome or result? Then we should spend time focusing on that with our clients. So people often have been taught about discovery meetings and finding out what's important to the client and all that. But where most people fail is they don't ask questions about what does success look like. And it's something as simple as saying, so Sean, just because you pay me money doesn't mean we're going to be successful. What would you and I measure together 6 months down the road to know that this was worthwhile and was a good investment? And then you might say, well, we would see this outcome and that outcome. And then I get to say, so Sean, even if we did everything we said we would do, what might prevent you from achieving those results, even if we did everything on our end? And now you're probably going to sit back and identify deficiencies in your own organization or your own hesitation about what might lead you to success, which probably will introduce opportunities for me to then say, oh, would you like our help with this or that? So it's something that when I speak with executives, I'll ask them when I explain this idea of focusing on results. And it's one of our four same side quadrants. It's the lower left quadrant in our quadrants when we're taking notes in meetings that we tell people to focus on. I'll say to them, well, what percentage of vendors that you've dealt with have ever asked that type of question about results? More than 10%, less than 10%. Always less than 10%. More than 5%, less than 5%. Always less than 5%. More than 1%, less than 1%. The answer is less than 1%. In fact, most people say it's 0. And then I ask them, well, so would you be willing to spend more with the vendor who asked those questions versus the vendors who don't? And the answer is, well, yeah. Okay, so when B2B sellers get frustrated that their clients are focused on price, it's because we haven't done a good job of shifting the conversation to focus on results.
Okay, I'm going to try to stump the chump. The end of the journey. Yes, I just called you a chump, Ian. The end of the journey.
That's why I'm here.
At the end of the buyer's journey, it's not uncommon for sales to have been working with an executive, and then it gets flipped intentionally to some type of procurement officer. Mm-hmm. It seems like everything you're talking about now, like procurement's designed to say, I don't care about all that stuff. I've got three equal vendors, regardless of what the salesperson has done right or wrong. How do you navigate that shift in buyer?
Well, for starters, what I would say is that most of the other vendors aren't going to be focused on that. My co-author, Jack Quarles, who spent 2 decades in purchasing and procurement, will tell you that procurement's greatest fear is not that they overpay for something. Procurement's biggest fear is that they select the wrong vendor who can't deliver. So if you sat down with procurement said, well, look, we need to extract our pound of flesh from you, Sean. And so we need you to come down 10% because these other guys are 10% less than you. What you might say is, you know, when we met with the executive team, these are the things they said were important to measure. And this is what success was going to look like. And everything we built is towards that. Do you think we overshot the requirements? Do you think those results maybe don't matter? Because if they don't, then we could restructure this and maybe do something that's scaled back. But if these are the results you need, if we could have done it for less, we would have already proposed that. But sometimes we overshoot what we're looking for. And now procurement is in this situation where they're like, okay, well, these guys are looking to move something other than just price. See, we can never give a unilateral concession. A unilateral concession is where we give the client the exact same thing we were going to give them, but at a lower price, because then we're teaching them that they may as well always ask for a discount because they don't have to give anything up. But if you said, okay, well, if this one result isn't that important, we can take that off the table. I can probably save you 5%. Now, procurement has to go back to that executive and say, how important is this one thing? Oh, that's the key to everything, right? And then, so that's what we're trying to get back to. So it's not And notice, I didn't say, no, we can't discount it. I said, well, yeah, if we can scale back this project if you don't need these three things.
Incredible. And that's the concept of same side selling, right? I'm not trying to push anything on anybody. I'm here to solve and to help and to be on your side. And if I can flip the side of the table that as a salesperson I'm sitting on, then that's brilliant. And I think that marketers need to think about that too. So we're talking about the worst thing taught to sellers, number one. Well, I'm going to rewrite this book and I'm going to say the worst thing taught to marketers, number one, is focus on features and benefits. And we have actually worked together on a common client. And after we were done, we reevaluated the website and said, you know what? We have too much feature benefit stuff. So we took the rants. You may have to explain what a rant is. I'd describe it as a customer's point of view about the problems they want solved. And we're rewriting and have rewritten the website. So it's much less about our stuff. Now, you can still download a fact sheet. It's one of the most downloaded pieces is a spec sheet that understands all the engineering principles and specifications. That's still very important to people. But man, we've changed. We're not talking about features and benefits anymore, and it's more effective. Conversions are up. So we're going to rewrite this for marketers. All right, we're not going to get into rants. We're going to talk forever. Buy the book. Go to Amazon. I'm not a book salesman, but I'm telling you, this is one of the books. I actually buy a bunch of these. Ian, I've never gotten my discount for bulk orders, by the way. I hand these books out. They're a fabulous book. Same Side Selling, Amazon, Ian Altman, IA Altman, A-L-T-M-A-N. Buy the book. Worst thing taught to sellers, number two, BANT. Let's banter this about.
Okay. So BANT is something that a long time ago, people came up with as a method for qualifying opportunities. And BANT stands for budget, authority, need, and time sensitivity. And so the idea
let's have some fun.
What's it?
Ian, let's have some fun with this. Ian, do you have a budget as I'm selling you my product and service?
Exactly. And that's often what people would say. Well, I'm not really sure what our budget is, right? Which is a clever way for the client to say, I don't want to tell you because I don't trust you, because right now you're asking me questions that relate to the sale, not relating to my outcome.
Well, I need to know, Ian, are you the decision maker can you sign this purchase order?
Oh, no, the company wouldn't possibly entrust that to me. Right. Because when you ask that question, that's in essence what you're asking is if you're asking them, are they the decision maker? You're basically creating an immediate adversarial position because either you should assume that they are. And if not, there are better ways to ask that question to find that out. Now, the need comes down to why is it you need to do this? That's totally fine. That's a good question to ask. And the time sensitivity is usually, well, how quickly do you need this? And that's fine also to ask. But the problem is, once you've gone through budget and authority, it's adversarial. You're probably not going to get an honest answer from people.
As data compliance laws become more stringent, many organizations will soon have non-compliant CRM data. Maybe you have insufficient first-party data, or you bought information from an improperly validated third party. However, you got it. Fixing it before the 2023 deadline should be a top priority. Fitzmartin's Wake the Dead program takes dead CRM prospects and applies a behavioral science model to re-engage them into your pipeline. In this process, you can reclaim old prospects or delete old ones, giving you a clean and compliant database with new opportunities from previously forgotten contacts. By retargeting with email and text automation, clients you might have considered dead or unresponsive will move forward and become potential prospects once again. For more information, check out the show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
I've already made you lie 3-4 times, right?
Exactly.
I've insulted you. Do you have authority, Ian? Well, of course I have authority. I think your specific example is the maintenance engineer, formerly known as janitors, would say, of course I can make this decision.
Exactly.
I
mean, the temp works.
So what's the same
desk.
Side? Absolutely. So what's the same side approach to this thinking? How can you do BANT? Same side thinking.
So for starters, the reason why budget is so misleading is most people don't really understand what it could or should cost to reach a certain outcome. So if we don't yet know what problem they're trying to solve, if we don't yet know what that problem is costing them, and we don't yet know what success looks like, how can we possibly have an intelligent conversation about budget? The answer is we can't. So people have the conversation anyhow, which means they're having an unintelligent conversation about the budget and an uninformed conversation. So instead, in the world of same-side selling, we focus on the fit. So the first thing we're doing is finding impact together or fit. So the idea is that someone says, oh, well, we're looking for this type of sales education for our team. Really, what inspired you to look for that right now? Well, we've got this issue where we're losing deals that I don't think we should be losing, and sales cycles are taking too long. I mean, how many deals could you be losing? Well, each rep could be losing 5 deals a year. Okay. And how much does each deal worth? And what happens if you don't solve that? And what things have you tried to this point? And now what's happening is, in the client's mind, they're building what the cost is of not solving this. And now it's okay. So if you were wildly successful, if we shorten these sales cycles, if people got better selling value, how many of those deals do you think you might recover? And now we have a pretty good sense of what our solution is worth and what their problem is worth. Now, the thing is that we have to be open to the fact that sometimes the client will give you information that tells you that they don't need what you have. I just finished working with a strategic client over the last quarter where they're selling in a very specific market. Their engineers are absolutely impressed with what they've built. And my conclusion at the end of the quarter was that the company should stop investing in trying to sell into this market because they were basically delivering a solution to a problem that didn't exist. The market didn't feel it actually had this problem that was worth solving. So I looked at their entire pipeline and said, these 2 deals have the potential to happen. The rest of these are all garbage. At the end of 90 days, one of those 2 deals happened. None of the rest happened. And the one deal was equivalent to like 1 week of what they're spending to maintain this company. And I'm like, if you guys want to keep pumping money into it, you can. But long term, the issue is that no one in the market thinks that this is a big problem. So they're not going to spend $2 million a year to solve a problem that they don't think exists.
Makes sense. I'm thinking through that. I'm thinking through how many times I've gone through and built a marketing campaign for somebody. And the answer is, oh, the marketing campaign didn't work. Well, maybe, or maybe there's not a need. You know, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And when you market based on needs, what happens is then you get to say to people, well, companies come to us because they're in this situation or that situation. So for me, very often it's business come to me because they've got deals that are stuck. They can't figure out why they're stuck and how to unstick those. They've got sales cycles that go on forever and they feel like these things should be happening faster. They're not growing as fast as they could. They struggle to build a culture of growth in their organization. And the mutual client that we've worked with together, I think, over the last couple of years, they've, tripled their business?
Roughly.
You know,
but who's counting?
I mean, you know, that's a significant change. And so for me, I always look at it as, when I'm talking to potential clients, I look at it as, are they going to be a good case study 18 months from now? And if they are, it's not just, are they going to be a good case study self-serving? It's, if I think they're going to be a good case study, that means I believe they're going to see great results.
Yeah, that's a brilliant filter, actually, especially in the professional services world. That's incredible. So worst thing taught to sellers, budget, authority, need, timeline, that doesn't make sense. And I played a little bit with you on the worst thing taught to sellers, number 3. Ian, who's the decision maker for this thing that I'm selling?
Yeah, it's just an awful question to ask because it's once again puts you in that immediately adversarial position. But instead, what I could ask is, let's say I was talking to you about what it's costing your organization to not solve this and what success looks like. And I might say to you, so Sean, who else would have a strong opinion about how we measure the impact of the organization? Who's most directly impacted by that? And who would totally disagree with how we're measuring success? Who would have a totally different opinion about what we should measure? And by the way, who in the organization is most likely to jump in the 11th hour, who we haven't talked about yet, and would either bless or kill this deal because they disagreed with one of those data points? Guess what?
Yeah.
That's going to tell you who needs to be involved in the decision in a non-adversarial way.
Ian, what's your thought on, if I'm a good professional, salesperson or marketer or executive of any type, I know the 3 or 4 types of decision makers that need to be involved. So it would lead me to say, you know, you're the CFO, but I know that the head of engineering and the head of operations will need to be involved with this. Is there a way to navigate that well and to position that as expertise? I mean, the sentence of, we know that these three people are typically involved in a deal. Is your organization like this? Is that a fair way of asking authority questions?
Yeah. In fact, the way that you just asked it, I think, is the best way to ask it, which is, if I said to you, well, I know that these people need to be involved, then it puts you in a position of, well, then why didn't you bring it up? But instead, if I said to you, so Sean, with other organizations similar to yours, what we found is that the person who's the head of engineering and the CFO often tend to get involved in this to make sure it fits their needs too. How would that be different in your organization? And you go, oh, it'd be the same with us. Okay, what's right. The best way for you and I to include them in the next conversation in a way that's comfortable for you? It makes it this way that now we've identified who they are. The natural inclination of the other person is, oh, now he's going to try and do an end around and get to those people. And instead I say, what's the best way for you and I to include them in the next conversation in a way that's comfortable for you?
Yep, perfect. And the idea of doing that allows me to maintain some integrity, is not quite the right word. Pride's not quite the right word, but some self-esteem maybe. Yeah, because you're not diminishing me. You're just saying this is kind of how it works. And that's what we know that. We've been here before, right? We shouldn't ever be selling in a situation that we're trying to figure out, like, I've got no idea who's going to make that decision. Because if you don't know who should make that decision, that probably means you're selling something out of your own motive instead of, you know, how to solve a problem for somebody. And to solve a problem successfully involves these three people.
The one thing to keep in mind, though, is this, is that sometimes our past experience can be a detriment. Meaning, if I said to you, well, I know these three people are going to need to be involved. Now you say, well, actually not in our organization. In fact, we don't even have someone in that role. Now it looks like I don't know what I'm talking about. That's but instead, if I say, look, more often than not, when we do these types of things, these are the key people who get involved in ensuring that the implementation is successful. It's this person, this person, that person. How would that be different in your organization? And now what it does is it allows me to demonstrate that I have expertise and experience and enough humility to say, well, maybe it's not the same in your organization. And the reality is that by doing it that way, more often than not, they go, no, that's pretty much how it would work here. But if I said, well, every organization I deal with does it this way, I'm sure yours is the same. Just to be a naysayer, you're going to be like, well, not us. No, we got one guy who's left-handed. Right. And it's like, oh, okay. Just want to have enough humility that says, so tell me how it's different in your world. And they go, well, it's not really different. Okay.
Love it. You know, and as at my vision in life, I want to elevate marketing's ability to impact this B2B emerging middle market space. And your executives, you should expect your marketing team to know how to help at this level as well. We have the skills, we have the technology, we have the data points to deliver messaging, proper messaging, not ads. Might look like an ad, but it's not an ad. It's something of value that a buyer would need to two or three different decision makers that each have a very different perspective. What we've been riffing on, a head of operations, head of engineering, and head of finance or money, CFO. I mean, they all have different points of view. It's very, I even say it's simple. It's probably not easy, but it's simple to deliver messages to those people in ways that it doesn't look or feel or act salesy. So even if you don't are not given access to the three or four other decision makers because whoever's in charge of this purchasing decision might be blocking you, marketing can aid and assist and deliver late stage messages. Now, I'm not going to start preaching here, Ian. I'm getting going though. I can feel it. It's not awareness messaging. If you quit sending awareness advertising to people that are mid-funnel, late funnel, it's just ridiculous that people even do that. And if you have a B2B marketer that isn't experienced enough and doesn't understand what a buyer needs, then they're going to deliver the wrong ads to the wrong people at the wrong time. And that's what centricity is all about. So, okay, we've got this great alignment. What I love about you, Ian, is that all of this is about the buyer. And that is what I'm passionate about. Like, let's focus on the buyer's needs. Sales knows how to sell. Marketing knows how to market. Customer success knows how to do their customer success things. Technology can support all of it. But we all get in these buckets of understanding our skills and crafts, and we forget the buyer. How do we do this? So we are very aligned on this buyer, the same side idea, this buyer focused centricity. So two closing questions, Ian. I'm done preaching. See, I told you I'd stop. For the B2B executive listening, what is step number one? I already told him to buy the book, so you can't use that.
Well, you know what? And I wouldn't have gone there anyhow. I think that step number one is having an acute understanding of what problem you solve for whom. Because if you can start your conversation saying, people come to us in your position when they're trying to solve these three issues, it changes the entire dynamic. And from there, then it's a matter of differentiation. I want to touch on one thing that you said that I want to make sure wasn't lost on the audience, which is for this mutual client of ours, when we did a same-side selling immersion workshop, they made sure that you and your team were there as well. And I think that sometimes what happens is organizations say, okay, well, I'm going to invest in this in my for my sales organization, and they don't include marketing. And then marketing comes up with language that has nothing to do with the sales process. They're not aligned. And then each side is pointing fingers at each other. Once you get sales and marketing aligned around these messages of here are the problems we're good at solving, here are the three different levels in the industry that you can find vendors, and we're at this top level, when you create that differentiation, everything else flows downhill.
Oh, man. And then what happens? So who has more power, sales or marketing, typically?
I look at it as they're joined at the hip. I have a very difficult time separating sales and marketing.
Well, you're informed. The answer, Ian, is sales has more power. Every CEO knows how to sell. Every CEO trusts sales. Marketers have, and I'm a marketer. I love marketing. I believe in marketing. But most marketers have had this, have not brought business thinking and sales support to the table. So we often get cornered as not connected or not thoughtful. But if we don't work with sales, we're going to be. And sales has the face-to-face relationship. So if we as marketers do the wrong things, say the wrong things, and sales doesn't, we're not giving sales what they need based on the buyer's needs, then they're not going to use it. Exactly. And they're going to create their own things. Every marketer complains about, this is such a simple illustration. Every marketer complains that, well, sales doesn't use our PowerPoint deck. Well, it's because we did it wrong. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, if the tool you gave them was phenomenal, they would use it.
They would use it. They didn't want to sit in the hotel room the night before and change the deck. They would have loved to have had dinner and a beer. I mean, come on. Exactly. So it's just marketing's got to be aligned. But the way to create alignment, and this is critical, Ian, I see so many articles, it drives me crazy. Sales and marketing alignment. How do we align sales and marketing? The answer is so easy, is you don't. You align sales to the buyer. You align marketing to the buyer. The outcome of that is sales and marketing alignment. And let's add to that the customer. I know. Let's add to that the customer success team. And then we can buy the technology that's needed to support all of that. And that's incredible. It's so simple. All right. Closing question number two. What is the thing that you've learned about sales or marketing that has most greatly impacted you as a professional? So not advice. I want to hear about you.
Practice. So I think that most people don't practice enough. And when it comes to keynote addresses, it's the extra one or two times the night before a keynote that I walk through the entire keynote again. People in sales meetings who have practiced the three different ways that meeting could go so that when those things happen, they know how to deal with them. It's that practicing and feedback loop that many people take for granted. If you think about it, the top athletes in the world practice more than anybody else. The top musicians practice more than anybody else. People in sales and marketing are like, no, I'm so good, I don't need to. And it's just a great fallacy because what you're really saying is, look, when I screw up, I want it to be with a real client where we lose money. I don't want it to be with my colleague where I learn something that I can improve on. So it's something that's important to me in my business is practicing and preparing for things. And it's something that in our Same Side Selling Academy, we emphasize in a big way as well, which is just people reinforcing the practice. And it's an amazing coincidence that the people who practice the most have the greatest success.
That's brilliant, which is not to say they won't have a failure, but exactly. They do have the most success.
But when they fail, they learn something.
Ian Altman, author, coach, Same Side Selling Academy. I want to mention this because I'm part of it. I actually have access to it. There's videos, there's coaching sessions, there's live sessions, there's emails. Y'all really do need to check out Ian Altman. I think the best way is ianaltman.com. Is that correct?
That's ianaltman.com or samesideselling.com. All roads point to the same place. And it's a neat little community that we built in the Same Side Selling Academy. And I mentioned to you, we have a renewal rate of better than 95%. In the world of digital products, that's pretty atypical. So I always look at it as the biggest measure for me and how effective we're being is the renewal rate and people coming back and referring their friends. So it's a fun place.
Ian Altman, it's remarkable. You're remarkable. Thank you so much for joining us on Centricity. I learn a great deal from you every time I read, listen, or talk to you. For listeners who gained insights, go check them out and come back and listen to the next episode of Centricity. We promise to deliver value to you. It's about you solving your problems. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Sean.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.